President Barack Obama has rarely used his power to pardon people convicted of crimes. The Justice Department says that's about to change. It gave federal inmates hope of publishing new criteria last week. If you're a low-level drug offender with no history of violence or ties to organized crime, and you've served at least 10 years, then you've got a chance. Now the department is bracing for thousands of petitions. For some perspective on the work in front of the Justice Department, we've called John Malcolm, a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so just from a purely legalistic process point of view, aside from the politics surrounding this whole situation, is the Justice Department acting in a prudent manner?
Well, let me actually correct one thing you just said, which is that the new guidelines are not just restricted to drug offenders. And indeed, look, the president's pardon power is plenary. He's got clear authority to do this under Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 of the Constitution, which says that the president shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. You know, whether this is a prudent thing or not, it's certainly true that President Obama has been sparing in his use of the pardon power. I think in his first 5 years, he's issued 61 or 62. Presidents in general have been somewhat reluctant to grant pardons because, you know, sometimes it comes back to bite them, like when President Clinton pardoned Mark Rich. And so oftentimes pardons are given to people who have long since finished serving their sentence, and this is somewhat unprecedented. He can do it. I must say I have a little bit of reluctance as to whether this is a prudent thing to do, for the simple reason that there is a bill currently pending before Congress that passed out on a bipartisan basis with votes from, you know, Senator Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Jeff Flake, called the Smarter Sentencing Act, that has a provision in there that would allow people sentenced under the old crack powder regime, which is mostly what this initiative is designed to attack, petition the sentencing court for a reduction in their sentence whenever the president takes unilateral action. And again, he's got the authority to do it here, unlike, in my opinion, other actions he's taken. When he takes unilateral action, it gets conservatives' backs up. And I think it's made what was always going to be a tough vote for conservatives perhaps a little bit tougher. But look, he can do this, and there's no question that there are sentencing injustices in the world. The guidelines are kind of loose. They talk about whether or not somebody has significant ties to drug cartels or criminal organizations, whether they have a significant criminal history. Those are all very vague, but look, these are all just guidelines. These decisions rest with the president and with the president alone.
So give us a sense, and we should say that you have worked at different parts of your career at the Justice Department. Give us a sense of the role the Justice Department plays. A lot of people have said that it has institutionalized the process, and here it is sort of taking the, again, listing this criteria, taking a holistic view at it. What is the Justice Department's role? What do they do?
Well, they have an Office of Pardons Review, and that's been, in fact, criticized by some on the outside, saying, look, you have the Department of Justice and only the Department of Justice reviewing essentially its own conduct, prosecutions that it has brought in the past. That's not going to change under this new clemency initiative. However, the old head of the Pardons Office, a guy named Ronald Rogers, is being eased out, and dozens of volunteers, if not new hires, are being solicited within the Justice Department to review these petitions. And there is an unprecedented outreach effort to the Bureau of Prisons. Prisoners are going to be informed of this initiative. They're going to be given, you know, forms to fill out if they wish to take advantage of this. The president is soliciting, and this isn't a bad thing, dozens of, if not hundreds, of private attorneys to volunteer pro bono to represent these people. And they have promised to step up these reviews. And the comments the president has made and his spokesperson Jay Carney and the deputy attorney general make clear that they are mostly targeting drug offenders who have received very, very long sentences, that perhaps they would get lesser sentences if sentenced under today's laws. And we'll see just, you know, they're clearly going to get thousands of applications, whether they grant tens or hundreds or thousands of pardons, or probably not pardons, but actually clemency, remains to be seen. I should point out the difference between a pardon and clemency, by the way, because it may be confusing to some. A pardon essentially expunges the record of the person who was convicted, as if they had never been convicted. Clemency, the conviction stands, but the sentence is reduced.
Sure. And so is one danger in all of this kind of mass approach to it, that there could be another Willie Horton-type case happening where someone who really needs to stay in jail could get out in the rush to all of this?
Well, look, that is almost inevitable. There are people who recidivate. I mean, yes, these people may have been nonviolent in prison, and they may not have significant ties, whatever that means, to drug cartels or gangs. But a certain percentage of people who spend time in prison, particularly drug offenders, will recidivate. I'm sure there will be violent incidents. That is an increased risk when you let people out before they've served their complete time.
We're speaking with John Malcolm, and he is director of the Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. The role that prosecutors play in this is interesting because, as prosecutors, they are supposed to push tough on crime and make sure that people do the time if they've committed the crime. What will they have to be doing now, though? Will they have to be reviewing theirs or perhaps their own colleagues' work in fields that they normally work at? That seems to require a mindset shift.
Well, it does. The department, for instance, has said that it's going to send a message out to all the U.S. attorneys in the 90-some-odd U.S. attorneys' offices across the country and ask them to try to identify potentially meritorious candidates, which is a little bit surreal, since these will have been candidates who will have been prosecuted by the offices in which they now head, and we'll see how it plays out. I'm assuming that prosecutors, you know, many of them may have moved on to other professions, but you know, left the government service. But I assume that they will be invited to weigh in as to whether they think a particular pardon or clemency application is ill-advised or meritorious. It is a mind shift, which is why there were criticisms of the Department of Justice in the past as being the only reviewing body, because, again, they're being asked to police their own and to pass judgment that other prosecutors were overzealous in prosecuting people or seeking stiff sentences.
I wonder if there could be some horse trading happening here if people have switched jobs, maybe switched offices, and one says, well, I'll give you John to get out early if you give me Sally to get out early.
Well, I don't think that will happen. I mean, if a prosecutor leaves government service and goes into, say, private practice, even if they become a defense attorney, there are clear ethical rules that they are not supposed to be involved in any matter in which they had, you know, any reasonable involvement while at the department. So you're not going to find somebody who prosecuted somebody is now retained by the family and goes in and seeks a clemency on behalf of the person whom he prosecuted. I doubt that kind of horse trading will go on. And again, these are decisions ultimately that are made by the president and the president alone. So I would hope that kind of thing would be sniffed out along the way.
And it seems like just by virtue of the fact of the labor involved, it's going to be a slow process. But now, you know, President Obama has much fewer years left in the White House than he has, you know, spent in the White House. Why do you think he's doing this now? And I'm wondering if this has something to do also just with the Justice Department's, the prison system being so overcrowded, and that's become a really big priority.
Well, there are a number of potential reasons for this. I mean, again, the president's pardon power is virtually plenary. He could have done this if he wanted to 5 years ago. He could have also waited to see what happens with the Smarter Sentencing Act and done this a year from now. There have been people who have speculated, look, we have another election around the corner, seems that we always do, and the president is trying to rally his political base, which will include African Americans who have received disproportionate in the sense of unfairness, but in terms of percentage of the population, have received a large number of these long sentences, mostly for crack cocaine dealing. So there's the cynical view, which may be correct, just because the cynical doesn't mean it's wrong, that this was done for political reasons. On the other hand, as you point out, federal prisons are currently 38% over capacity. They're projected to grow in a couple of years to 44% over capacity. The Bureau of Prisons takes up 25% of DOJ's budget, projected in a couple of years to grow to 30% of the department's budget. And so there is some pressure there. And so perhaps some of this is being motivated as a pressure release system, I think you'd have to release an awful lot of people, probably more than the president plans on releasing, to have significant amelioration of the overcrowding problem. But, you know, we'll see.
But as a long-term strategy for that amelioration, does it seem to go hand-in-hand with the effort to decriminalize marijuana use that's happening more at the state level than at the federal level at this point, but sounds like it's sort of creeping upstairs?
Well, you certainly are seeing that at the state level, and the president has pretty much announced, I may disagree with the strategy, that he's going to give a pass to prosecutions in those states that would violate federal law but not state law. Look, there are a number of bills pending before Congress that I think, in terms of relieving the prison overcrowding situation, would have more promise. The Smarter Sentencing Act I mentioned before, that would provide relief for front-end sentencing. How long, what the level of mandatory minimum sentence is going to be, it would basically cut them in half for drug offenders. There's another bipartisan bill, Corn and White House, that deals with back-end reform. It basically says that if somebody, while in prison, takes steps to try to improve their life and make it less likely that they will recidivate, that if they are deemed a low risk of recidivating, that they can be released early. Those are, on a more broad scale, promising initiatives to help lighten this burden. But I will say that the states have very much taken a lead in this regard. I mean, there are a lot of states that have engaged in criminal justice reform and eliminated or reduced mandatory minimum sentences or done other innovative sentencing practices, and many of those reform initiatives look very, very promising.
And just before we let you go, what would you say the success of this initiative depends on?
It depends on how you define success, and that's very hard to say. I mean, if you define success as releasing thousands of inmates, then all the president has to do is take out his pen and start signing clemency petitions. If you view success as an expediting of the procedure to identify on a case-by-case basis truly meritorious people that results in tens, maybe 100, a couple of hundred people being released because of what society at large would perceive as injustices, then it will have been successful. There's no question that the mechanism that the Department of Justice is setting up should certainly expedite review of these applications, and which is good because they'll be receiving thousands of them.
John Malcolm directs the Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.